Hey, this is Hojo, and you're listening to me on Baseball and Barbecue with my two best friends, my new best friends, Jeff and Leonard. So y'all enjoy it, okay?
This is episode 81 of Baseball and Barbecue. I am Leonard Aberman, and I am honored to be joined by the other half of our double play combo, a man who should be voted unanimously into the Hall of Fame, Jeff Cohen, as we bring you incredible guests from the baseball and barbecue world. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Leonard, how are you doing?
Good. Excited. We already had our first episode of the new year, so this isn't even our first episode of the new year. It's our second episode. It's exciting because, you know, tonight we're doing a Brundle Fly, if anybody knows what I'm talking about. We are bringing together two worlds, colliding them. We're All bringing right. together a true rocket scientist who then became an award-winning pitmaster and an ambassador for Head Country, as well as a representative for Traeger Grills, who has very quickly become a good friend of the show. That is Doug Scheiding, who is a self-avowed Chicago Cubs fan. And then we bring in none other than a Major League Baseball veteran who played for 15 years for five teams. He had two home runs in the 1984 World Series, and he has played with some of the game's greatest, and that is Kurt Bavakwa. How exciting is that?
They called him Dirty.
Yes.
Kurt Bavakwa. He was a great interview and very timely because we talk about the Hall of Fame, which will be the announcement will be in a couple of weeks.
Yes. And but there's no, as we tell everybody our opinion, and of course, that's how the voters should go. So,
Of course.
But we get both of them on. We do a round table, and I think we got into some really interesting talk. We're actually splitting it into three segments. We're going to have Kurt and Doug, and then we'll have Doug and us talking baseball, some more baseball, because Kurt had to leave at one point, and then we conclude with Doug and Barbecue Talk. This is an episode you don't want to miss.
Absolutely not. This is baseball and barbecue.
Yeah.
And let me say,
doesn't get any better.
That's right. And let me say, if you want to give the show a call us, 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. We have Twitter. Our Twitter address is @baseballandbbq. With Instagram at Baseball and Barbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. Check us out on our YouTube page and check us out on our website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And please rate and review us.
When it comes to baseball and barbecue and Hall of Fame talk, this is the only podcast that you ever need.
That's right.
Let's join Kurt and Doug as we talk about baseball and the Hall of Fame.
Baseball and BBQ is pleased to welcome back to a show a 15-year veteran of six major league teams, most notably with the San Diego Padres. And he was a big part of the World Series run in 1984, where he batted .412 and hit two home runs against the Detroit Tigers. He played infield, and he was known by the nickname Dirty. Born in Miami and now called San Diego home, welcome back, Kurt Bavakwa.
I have the honor of introducing Doug Scheiding. For those of you listeners who may not know, Doug Scheiding played for the Chicago Cubs, hit 550 career home runs, also pitched on the off days when they needed a relief pitcher. had a 1.30 career ERA. And all right, so you all know I'm kidding, but actually, Doug Scheiding from Road Cookers, he's a barbecue world champion. He's also a Traeger spokesperson. He's a head country ambassador. He's also the longest running embedded correspondent on the Barbecue Central show. For those of you who don't know, we're going to make it official right now. Doug is our friend. And are pleased to have him on with us and honored to have Kurt Pavakwa as well. So let's do it.
How you doing, Kurt?
Doing great. How about yourself? Hey, guys. Hey, Doug.
Howdy.
So, like I said, we want to talk to you about the Hall of Fame. It's Hall of Fame season. There's battling going on. And we know the last time we spoke to you, you've had some very strong opinions on it. So we'd like to get your take on it.
And you know what, Kurt? You were a phenomenal guest. When we have a great guest and we get great feedback on that guest, we bring them back as quickly as we can. So we should have had you back a lot sooner. But thanks for coming back with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm glad that we got some good vibes from the folks listening out there. Boy, guys, I tell you what, there's not a whole lot about baseball lately that I'm enjoying, to be perfectly honest with you. So to talk about induction into the Hall of Fame just a few days after Richie Allen passed away, and the Hall of Fame announcing that they're not going to hold the Golden Days and Errors Committee situation, which, you know, there was a chance that Richie might have been elected before he died, if in fact it wasn't for this COVID-19 thing. You know, I love Tim Mead. He's the new Hall of Fame guy, deservingly so. He's a great guy. He was in Southern California marketplace for a long time, mostly with the Angels. But to not make this something that was put in the forefront, it almost leads me to believe that, oh, you know what? I'm not even going to go there because I think it's unfair if I already said Tim's name and I know damn well that he cares about people. But they need to make some decisions to get guys who deserve to be in certain situations and, for that matter, get the workforce back to work all around the United States with this COVID thing. For them to announce that they weren't going to have Zoom meetings on these committees because they had to look each other in the eye was something along those lines. I don't know the exact quote. That bothered me a little bit. And I'm sure it bothered a lot of other people because I can talk to somebody just as well as I can in person the way we're doing right now. And for somebody to make a statement that the error committee has to be a personal thing, they have to sit down across from one another, it almost makes me believe that they sway each other's votes by hearing something like that. And, you know, I'd like to think that that doesn't happen. But, you know, I've seen these votings turn out a lot differently than we all anticipated, especially with a guy that's actually going to be inducted this year into the Hall of Fame in Marvin Miller. Mm-hmm. You know, he should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago.
Right.
And, you know, it was all about the committees that were put together. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't sit back and take a look at it.
Wow.
Was it because they said it was some rule or something that it had to be in person and that couldn't be adjusted given the circumstances? But that's what I had read about it. And I was actually surprised and a little disappointed because we may go this year without having anyone inducted, which would be, I think, a travesty or for baseball, I think.
I tell you what, that wouldn't bother me at all.
Oh, really?
Because if there's nobody that's deserving to go into the Hall of Fame, they shouldn't have anybody in Cooperstown in July getting inducted into the Hall of Fame that doesn't deserve to be. There's plenty of guys that have been passed over in Hall of Fame bout voting that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. And now they're struggling to get enough votes within the 10-year period to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And some of them aren't going to be. When they have a ceremony in Cooperstown, just to have a ceremony, that bothers me. So I wouldn't care if they went a whole year without somebody being inducted. But if somebody deserves it, I think they should. But for them to, you know, it bothers me what you just said, Doug, about what you read was the reason for them not having the committee put together. It's correct. A rule. I mean, who makes the rules?
Yeah, I knew nothing of this rule, so I thought, well,
I mean, that's ludicrous.
And I actually think the Veterans Committee can vote some people that may be deserving into the Hall of Fame, and that's part of what they do. So I actually thought that if no one is elected through the riders, that they may have someone that would go forward in addition to the ones that made it last year.
I agree with that. You know, I always thought that that was to make up for the, past omissions. I don't know what it is, but sometimes players, they slip by, and I always thought it was to make up for those errors. So it's a shame that they didn't meet. I don't really, the whole looking someone in the eye, he should be in the Hall of Fame, and it's a shame that he passed away before. But if we could talk about this year's ballot for a moment, or there's some people on the ballot, of course, that if we could jump in, there are some known steroid users on the ballot. I'd like to get everybody's opinion. First of all, what are your opinions as far as steroids? And if a person is a known steroid user, let's say a Barry Bonds, should they go in the Hall of Fame? Kurt?
Well, you know, I think the thought process on this has become a little more laxed over the course of the years. And I know it doesn't have anything to do with steroid use, but a person that had full knowledge of steroids being used in Major League Baseball was inducted into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. And that was Commissioner of Baseball. So for Bud Selig to be in the Hall of Fame, and for them to say that the players can't, that were using the steroids that he allowed, then shame on baseball and shame on the Hall of Fame. You know, Bud Selig's been involved with corruption ever since 1983, when he got together with all the other owners and put together the collusion ruling. So got the owners to collude against the Players Association. Naturally, they were fined for it. But, you know, Bud Selig was one of the head honchos in that. What the hell is Bud Selig doing in the Hall of Fame? So we ask a lot of questions about guys that deserve to get into the Hall of Fame and aren't. But we very seldom talk about, and I've been outspoken about this before too, and it's a shame that we even have to go there, that somebody like that gets elected in the Hall of Fame. And then you've got a guy like Marvin Miller, who some owners just couldn't stand because of what he did for the Players Association. And that's the reason he wasn't elected to the Hall of Fame, because, again, he was elected through the Veterans Committee.
Right.
So, you know, he wasn't going to get elected any other way. I mean, I think it's going to be fun. And I'm sorry that those guys lost the opportunity last year because of COVID in Jeter, Walker, and Simmons. Whether or not these guys all deserve, the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, I'll never point out that they shouldn't be. Non-baseball players, maybe, like I just did.
Right.
with guys that were elected into the Hall of Fame and it was a ball player, I will never say that they don't belong there. Do I believe that there's guys in the Hall of Fame that shouldn't have been elected? Yes, but I'll never name who I think they are.
Right.
That would be very unfair. And besides, I have too much respect for guys that played the game and the game of baseball. But I think it's going back to what we said earlier in the conversation. It's a ceremony, and it's become a marketed ceremony in which, you know, there's a lot of money that's made, and there's a lot of money that changes hands when players get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And a lot of visitors go to Cooperstown, and, you know, they all go there, and they should. I mean, it's a great place to go and visit. But if you don't have guys that put up the numbers and deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, today's day and age with the type of player that gets voted in and how they get nominated. And, you know, the Tim Hudson's in the world and the Torrey Hunters of the world basically being scratched off the list because their war isn't what the Hall of Fame averages. That really bugs me. You know, here's a new statistic that was just brought into play in baseball. And now that's how we're judging a guy's entrance in the Hall of Fame. I just don't think it's right.
I completely agree with you. And I'm glad you brought up Tim Hudson and Torrey Hunter. And the reason I say this is because I was listening to the radio the other day and this in New York, and there was this sports personality on the radio, don't remember his name. And he was really upset with some of the names on the Hall of Fame ballot. You know, the Nick Swishers, the Shane Victorinos. And I said to myself, wait a second. To be on the Hall of Fame ballot, you have to be one of the top, I don't know, 1,000 players to be in Major League Baseball, and you have to do that for 10 years. So to be on a ballot is a hell of an accomplishment, and it should not be degraded because, you know, you don't think it's good enough. Now, obviously, you know, these guys probably not going to make the election, and they'll probably drop off, but just to be on the ballot, that is a hell of an accomplishment by these guys, and it should not be degraded at any point.
What does it take to get on the ballot?
You have to be
10 years?
At least 10 years and then be retired 5 years after that to get on the ballot, yes.
So I was on the ballot at one time?
Yes.
Yes, you were.
I think I paid off Phil Collier out here in San Diego to at least vote for me. I wanted to get one vote.
You know what? To have a career for 10-plus years in the major leagues – where the competition is so fierce, and especially, Kurt, when you played, there were less teams, is a really a major accomplishment, like Jeff said. Doug, there are on the ballot, we know there are some players on this ballot. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Manny Ramirez, Sammy Sosa, just looking quickly at it, that we know the only reason that they're not in yet has to do with either we're tested for steroids, we're suspected of steroids, we're on the list, you know, but it's definitely steroids involved. Doug, you grading these players, would you put any known steroid users in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, I would. And when I went back to the definition of what is the voting's based on, the record, ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the team. To me, if it's not just a yes or no answer. So a lot of people, players, seem to have denied it, and there's a lot of evidence supporting that they did. There's other players that have come out and said, yes, I did, asked for forgiveness. So I would probably be more willing to someone that's come clean and bring them in. So I would do that. People that have tested, there's at least one person that has tested in 2009, I believe it was, and tested positive after, you know, it was implemented in 2005. And actually, I think there were two instances for that person. So to me, that's a problem because you know that it's illegal at that time. And so you should be not only once, but twice. So that person, that probably wouldn't be someone from a character than sportsmanship that I would vote for.
Kurt?
I'm putting up, you know what, if I had a Hall of Fame vote this year, there's probably five guys that I would vote for.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Schillings.
Right.
Clemens, Bonds, Sheffield, and Jeff Kent.
Okay. You know what? We'll go around, but I know right away, I don't want to put words in Jeff's mouth. I agree with you on Kent. Let's talk about Jeff Kent for a second. I think Jeff Kent should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's got great stats. I think he gets penalized because people say, well, you know, he played with Bonds and Bonds carried him. I don't agree with that. Jeff, Doug, start with Doug. Doug, are you putting Jeff Kent in the Hall of Fame?
He was on my list of top 10, but not in my top 5. Yes.
Okay, Jeff.
Well, you know what? Jeff Kent was a wonderful player. I never saw him as a Hall of Famer. That may just be my perception. I know he was a great hitter, I'm not sure how great he was on the field, but you know what? I can go either way. But actually, I want to talk about Omar Vizquel for a minute, Kurt, if you don't mind. I was looking at his stats and comparing them to Ozzie Smith. Hitting-wise, they're very, very equal. Omar did play a couple more years than Ozzie Smith. Ozzie had 13 gold gloves and Omar had 11. They're very close there. Ozzie obviously was a all-star 15 times. I think Omar was only 3 times. But Omar played in the American League when he had Nomar Garciaparra, Derek Jeter, A-Rod. But I think Omar deserves to be in Hall of Fame because he was just a fantastic shortstop, and he just doesn't have the nickname like the Wizard of Oz. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, there's another guy that when you start thinking about guys that could put in the Cooperstown, but you know, I think one of the names, unfair or not, that you pull off a plaque in Cooperstown to compare stats when infielders roll around is Mass. Right. And the reason behind that is if you look at his numbers, I mean, they're just, you know, they just don't jump out off the page at you. But he was the guy that hit that famous home run. But I don't think the Hall of Fame is a place where, you know, you put somebody for a few games performance or one swing performance. And I think that those situations occur when the voting goes on in the Hall of Fame, and also the likability, you know, that shouldn't come into play. You know, it was mentioned that I hate it when I'm thinking of 3 or 4 things and I lose my train of thought. Well, I'll get back to it was mentioned before, but you know, you can look at the stats of a guy like Billy Wagner. I tell you what, let's talk about this for a minute. I'm going to ask you guys, because you're on top of it. From this day forward, is a starting pitcher ever going to get voted into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, you're right. And that magical 300 number will never happen again. But you're right. I just finished the biography of Tom Seaver. And, you know, pitchers like him and Gibson and even Greg Maddux, they're never going to come around again. They're not allowed to pitch that way anymore, which is a shame. I don't think you might not see a really good starting pitcher be elected.
Oh, come on. Kershaw is going in on the first ballot.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to take him off the list.
But you know, but there is a different criteria that we need to, you know, we've got the change in the mound in 69. We've got a juice ball. We've got a lot of things that are different in baseball, even the 100 pitch, you know, limit that they Bob Gibson had 255 complete games. Clayton Kershaw has 25 complete games. But they're both going to be in the Hall of Fame. So the criteria, you know, I read that there was a Jaws criteria, you know, your best 7 years of war, which, you know, seems completely. And then there was an ERA plus, et cetera. I think there are certain, you know, pitchers out there that will be getting in. We won't have another 300 game.
No. But an ERA now is looked at much more importantly than, you know, it used to be wins and losses. And now, I mean, you're looking at these guys that are on this ballot and like a Curt Schilling, right? 216 career wins. But, and Curt, you had mentioned him as one of your choices. So 216 career wins, 146 losses. So his ratio is good. Career ERA was 3.46. And he had great postseason numbers. Now, let me ask you this. When looking at someone like Curt Schilling, because some people will say, well, take away the postseason. Does the postseason – first of all, I think postseason, whatever the player does as a player, whether they're in the postseason or not, has to be involved in the decision. But are you putting Curt Schilling in the Hall of Fame without his postseason numbers?
No. And I'm not sure if – you put him into the Hall of Fame without the one performance in Boston with blood coming through the sock. You know, that was a Mazeroski type of a thing. And when you have guys that are in the Hall of Fame for certain things that they do, those are the kind of things that stand out to me that I'm trying to figure out how these guys think nowadays. And it's hard for me because none of them had stepped foot on a baseball field before. So it's difficult for me to, there's some people out there that probably know more about baseball than I do, but I don't know if they have Hall of Fame votes. Okay. I've met quite a few guys that have Hall of Fame votes that only think they know about the game. You know, they certainly don't know I know what it was earlier that you mentioned, Leonard. You talked about Jeff Kent having protection with Barry Bonds. These guys don't even know what the hell they're talking about when they say that.
Right.
They have no clue because they've never played the game before, and they don't realize how important that is. But believe me, Jeff Kent also protected Barry Bonds. Right. So it can go both ways in that situation. And, you know, was he a check it off first time he's on the ballot Hall of Fame or no? But you compare him with other guys that are in Cooperstown's numbers, and he deserves to be there. I don't think that's the way you vote for the Hall of Fame, because each player is different independently on what he brings to the game. Just like Doug said, you look at a guy like Joe Morgan, you know, there were some of his stats that really weren't that outstanding. But you know what? Joe Morgan was a winner. He made guys winners that were around him. And, you know, he proved he was a winner with the Reds in 75 and 76 with back-to-back MVP awards. The type of player that he was, would he have been in the Hall of Fame if he hadn't been on the Reds in 75 and 76? Probably not. So those 2 years defined him as a Hall of Famer, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, don't compare Kent's numbers to Joe Morgan's numbers, saying that he should be in the Hall of Fame too if Joe Morgan's in there. I just think that there's certain players that deserve to be in there that have been talked about for years and years and years, and they haven't gotten the opportunity. Hell, it's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of Great. You know, there are great players that come and go in the game of baseball. Unfortunately, they're not guys that I used to look at as being my idols. And now there's plenty of guys who have plaques in Cooperstown that I don't consider my idol at all. Were they good players? Yeah, they were good players.
Kurt, let me ask you this. As a former player, who did you play with? Is there someone you played with that is not in the Hall of Fame that you think should be?
Yeah, you know why? Because when people tell me things like, you know, you played with 14 Hall of Famers, I go, what? Who were they? I don't even remember. So let's see. I think we guys that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's one player that just didn't get the recognition that he deserved.
Would Steve Garvey be one?
Well, you know, Garv's close. He's really close. And I wonder if I think about it quite often, because him and I became pretty close in San Diego. And I almost wonder if his niceness didn't cause him to not be liked by a lot of the writers, which seems counterproductive. But Garv is such a good guy. And I think a lot of his off-field stuff might have hurt him in the voting with a lot of people. Maybe he wasn't being as honest as he wanted people to think that he was with a lot of things. But, God, you hit me with a question that I'm going back, and I'm going to think about that for the rest of the time we're talking, and I'll have somebody.
That's why
a guy that I never played with. Another guy that really should be in the Hall of Fame and that isn't yet is Tommy John.
Yeah.
They talk about him pitching for 26 years and what does he have, 286 wins or something like that?
Yeah, it's like he's up there,
sure. Yep. Sure, he got them because of the longevity of his career, but, I mean, to hell, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yep.
Going out there and putting up numbers for however number of years. Boy, he did it two different ways, too. I mean, he had different kind of stuff before it was the original Tommy John surgery, and then – you know, he became a finesse pitcher, and it worked for him.
And you know what it's like to train every year to have to get your body in shape to go on the field. Because there was a period of time when I thought, you know, somebody who is called a compiler, right? And I thought, oh, they're a compiler. But thing about a compiler is they're there every season. They stay on the field. They play through injuries. They put up numbers consistently every year, and you know what it's like to do that. So Tommy John put up those numbers. Maybe it took longer as far as years, but I agree with you. He's somebody who should definitely be considered for the Hall of Fame.
I just thought of the guy, Al Oliver.
Al Oliver, hell of a player. Hell of a player. Yeah.
And hell of a guy, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wouldn't, but I know he's a hell of a player.
He hit a ball in Montreal one night. I was playing first base, and Sid Manji was the pitcher. And I know how Al used to hit the ball hard back through the middle. I used to watch him in batting practice, and he was one of those proverbial hit down on the ball kind of guys. And when you hit down on the ball, you create a backspin on it that's different than this launch angle that they talk about now. But Al used to hit the ball so hard through the infield and into the outfield, or if a guy was in front of the ball, he had to figure out a way to catch it without it breaking through the laces. But Sid Manji was pitching for us. Al hit a line drive back through the middle, and it hit Sid in the head. Tony Gwynn took one step in from right field and caught it in the air.
Wow.
That's how hard he hit it. And he was fine. That's why we can laugh about it now, because I couldn't believe it. Al couldn't believe that he was out after hitting that ball. But Al was a good guy. He was a teammate in both Pittsburgh and Texas. And he was a hell of a player and a hell of a hitter. He really was.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I'm just looking up Al Oliver. I mean, he was just shy of 3,000 hits and 58th all time. And, wow, he was only on the ballot for 1 year and didn't make the 5%.
Is that crazy?
That is crazy. He only got 4.1%, it said.
Wow.
And he had, he is, wow, 4,000 bases.
I mean, me getting 4.1%, you can gulp that down.
Yeah. He was a career 303 hitter.
I know. I'm surprised I didn't think of him right off the bat, but I didn't think of Pittsburgh. I don't know why I went to San Diego right away.
You know, when you consider, and I don't want to bring up a guy who went in, but probably if you look at his stats and you compare him to Harold Baines, I have a funny feeling that Oliver's might be better. Just, I don't even know his stats. I'm not looking at him. But I just have a funny feeling.
Well, that's where the nonsense of the Veterans Committee comes into play. And I'm not going to downplay the career of a ball player because I know how difficult it is. But that particular player is in the Hall of Fame because of one guy. And you guys probably know who it is. And it's Jerry Reinsdorf. He's got a lot of power. He wields a lot of power. And for me to read what I talked about earlier, that you have to sit across from Jerry Reinsdorf at the table. You can't look at him on a Zoom call because you can't see the reaction. You can't see him kicking your friggin' shin underneath the table or whatever the hell that they do. But, you know, for that to be part of the process really bothers me. It really bothers me because this is the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is about them making a choice to put somebody in that's going to be in this place forever. I mean, it's never going to go away. And that's quite an honor. You know, the COVID-19 thing And why do they call it COVID-19? Why isn't it COVID-20? It's been here a hell of a lot longer than 19.
It was the 19th version of that particular virus.
I don't even know where 19 came from, but that's Tony Gwynn's number.
Yeah.
Talking about a guy that really didn't get a lot of credit as much as he should is Tony. I know he's the first ballot Hall of Famer and he almost got 100%, maybe should have. I mean, that guy's one of the greatest hitters that this game's ever going to see.
And totally he's great.
Down that way. And you know what? There's a lot of people that never even saw him play, with the exception of a few World Series games, if they were lucky in 84.
I want to ask you guys this before, because I know, Kurt, your time is limited. I want to ask Doug and Kurt this question. We see ballots now because of how they're processed. So we see ballots by the same people where last year they check off, let's say they check off Bonds and Clemens last year, and then this year they take them off, or maybe Todd Helton was last year and this year off. I understand if they had 10 people that were better than them on the ballot, but when they only have a few that they pick, if a guy is your Hall of Fame choice this year, wouldn't he be your Hall of Fame choice the following year? I mean, why would somebody take this person off a ballot? You have any opinions on that, Doug?
Well, if they're voting for 10, but I think you're talking about the case where they're not voting for 10.
Exactly. So, nobody checks off 10 on a ballot. These are people that checked off at most 4 or 5. So why are they, one year they have them on and one year they don't? What happened? Did they play more games? Did they lose stats? I mean, why are they Hall of Famers?
They got kicked under the table. Who knows? But yeah. But anyway, yeah. I you know, perhaps going through this process, I changed my mind on a few things, and it was actually kind of interesting. So I could see in some cases where your mind might change, or there might be new information. But you know, for the most part, you'd think. I'm a consistent guy and I'm loyal like a dog. So I would think a consistent vote would be one that would be cherished.
Do you think, Doug, it has anything to do with the anonymity?
Well, yeah, obviously if it was totally anonymous, then yeah, you could play with things and, you know, change your vote from one year to the next. So
that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
When the question was asked, because if you don't want to be known as a steroid voter, you can vote for him behind the curtain. But once that curtain opens and everybody gets to see your vote, you take them off the ballot.
Yeah.
So in other words, you don't have any guts. That's basically what it boils down to.
Right. You know, Kurt, you know, a lot of people talk about Bonds and Clemens. And when I hear that, I think of another name that should be on this list, but he's not. And that's Ralphio Primero. The guy hit 3,000 hits, 500 home runs at those two magical marks. Yes, we know how what he said in Congress, but he's got to be in the same conversation as Bonds and Clemens and Sosa and all those guys. And he's not even eligible because he's off the ballot.
And my mind right away goes back to what everybody else saw.
Yeah,
with him testifying in front of Congress, being so adamant about what he was saying. And then going back to earlier in our conversation, hey, fess up. The world's going to forgive you. Just say this. I did it. I screwed up. I made a mistake. You know, it's hard to do at the time. It's just like it was hard, you know, for Pete to say that I gambled on baseball. You know, he denied it for as long as he possibly could. And then he finally came clean. And he just made so many mistakes that I just don't know if he's ever going to get in. It's going to be a shame if he doesn't. I just don't know if it's ever going to happen. I think with Ralphie, it's, boy, him and Will Clark at Mississippi State, that's something, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's something.
Wow. Talk about Hall of Fame.
Really. Kurt, I know we only have a few more minutes of your time. I want to ask you, what do you think of the state of the game today as opposed to when you played? Obviously, it's a much different game. I kind of liked your era better, but what were your thoughts?
It's like what I said when we started the show. There's not too many things that are happening in the game right now that are making me happy. you know, I look forward to watching baseball last year, just like everybody else. We were hungry for baseball games. You know, I'm going to watch baseball until the day I die, but it's not going to make me any more happy about the changes that have been made, the things that are being done, the elimination of 42 minor league teams just recently, the fact that Joe the Usher, that's done it for 20 years, is not going to have a job this year, because that just doesn't hurt Joe the Usher. It hurts all the people that he greets that come into the ballpark, and that it's been his lifelong work to work at a baseball game. I tell you what, nobody ushers at a minor league park for 15 to 25 years unless they love the game of baseball. And they're ambassadors to the game of baseball. I challenge anybody doing this show right now to name an ambassador for the game of baseball right now. I mean, with all the disagreements that I've had with Tommy Lasorda, he was actually an ambassador for the game. There were Ernie Banks was an ambassador for the game of baseball. I can't think of any ambassadors to the game of baseball right now. It's surely not coming out of MLB's offices. It's a damn shame what's going on there. And I don't know. I don't know how much more of it's going to go on. You know, they're keeping all the clubs right now sitting on a fence as to what's going to happen in 2021. I mean, I know they can't say how many games are going to be played, but they can surely make the rules for the number of games that are going to be played. Sure. I mean, is the National League going to have a DH or not?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of guys' jobs that rely on that decision. There's payroll to be thought about for major league clubs. I think that's what it's going to come down to this year. I think if every National League club employs a designated hitter, most of them are going to be fairly highly paid guys, because that's what DHs are for. And if there's 15 jobs lost, it's going to save a lot of money for major league teams. And I think these guys have finally gotten to a point, when I say guys, I'm talking about the owners, along with Manfred, have gotten to a point where they're agreeing a hell of a lot more than they're disagreeing with one another now, because of the amount of money that's being made and just where they've put themselves. And I think they've really put themselves in a position across the table from the Players Association where they can hurt them going forward.
Yeah, I keep saying they should get those negotiations started, right? Don't wait till the end of next season, because it could be really, really bad. Doug, any final words before we let Kirk go?
Yeah, on that, I think, you know, didn't the players' union kind of miss on the negotiation where they negotiated that the rule changes could be turned down 1 year and then the next year go into effect? I mean, to me, that was a little bit of a travesty, I think.
Well, there's been a few misses by the Players Association in the last few negotiations.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a major one, though, especially when it comes to rules. Say no 1 year, and then the next year it can be implemented.
I agree with that. You know, there's rules that have to be changed back. You know, there's rules that shouldn't even be talked about being a part of the game. You know, I kind of enjoyed, in a way, although the way that it was managed surprised me. I kind of enjoyed a guy being on second base in the 10th inning last year.
Kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And you know what? When I was coaching my son's little league team, I used to hate it. That's the funny part about it. But I was so excited when the playoffs began. And I knew that they were going to implement this rule. I said to myself, I go, I can't wait to see what these guys do, because none of them are going to be able to freaking bunt.
Right. So,
it was comical. But yet a big percentage of the time, they just went about their business. I mean, there was no strategy to get a guy over or to bunt a guy over, surely, and or to hit a ball to the right side of the infield. Back in the day when I played, your ass is out of the lineup if you don't get a guy over in a key situation from second to third base and no outs. by doing it either by bunt or hitting the ball the other way and giving yourself up. That's the way you played the game. It's, you know, there's a very few guys that can hit the ball the other way nowadays. And the guys that can do it, those are the good players. They're the guys that hit for average.
Yep.
He said a lot.
Yes.
Kurt, you said a lot. And
did I?
Yeah.
And, I'm sorry.
And, no, Dr.
Sorry if I talked too much.
No, not at all. Not at all.
We appreciate your candor. We appreciate you, and we thank you so much. This has been extremely enjoyable.
Yes. And Kurt, we appreciate you taking your time out. I know you have to go, but it's been a real pleasure. I follow you on Facebook. You do those Facebook Live. I try to catch in when every time you do that. It's really a great thing that you do. And we wish you all the best of luck.
I haven't done one of those for a few months now because Hank Bauer, the former Charger football player, lives out here in San Diego. Him and I started doing a show.
Ah.
And it's streaming. And it also is on a local 50,000-watt radio station out here in Southern California. So we're getting into that, and it's starting to be a lot of fun.
Well, best luck to you. Wish you all the best. You know, keep well, and thanks for joining us.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation, and if you hold true to the popularity of the show, then I'll be expecting to come back, right?
Oh, yes.
Excellent. Excellent.
If not, I'm not going to be back.
Thanks a lot, guys. Doug, everybody, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Too.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye. And we'd like to thank Kurt Bevacqua for taking out some time from his day to speak with us. It's always great to talk to Kurt Bevacqua. Right, Len?
Yeah. I can't believe it's been a year since we spoke to him, but he was a great guest. He definitely had a lot of opinions on baseball. It was great.
Yes.
Now, Jeff, a few things. We have some very, very nice companies that we deal with. One being Fifth and Cherry. I have been using the Fifth and Cherry cutting board. It's out on the counter. And I got to tell you, we're not just using it just to cut meat on. During the holidays, we made pigs in the blanket for a little New Year's Eve celebration, my wife and I. We rolled out the dough, cut the dough on that board, made a little crudité, cut those vegetables on the board. It's out there. We use it all the time. It is such a beautiful part of the kitchen. Highly recommend fifthandcherry.com. And another great company that we love is, of course, baseballbbq.com. They make incredible grilling accessories with handles that are shaped like baseball bats. Very cool. Check out their website, baseballbbq.com. They are terrific. Last but not least,
if you like reading books, check out the Pandemic Baseball Book Club. A lot of great authors, really great books. And I understand they're going to have a new set of authors when new books come out. So check them out at Pandemic Baseball Book Club.
They've been giving us a lot of great guests, a lot of great authors. And now, Jeff, let's go into our next segment with Doug Scheiding. As Kurt left us, but we still talk about baseball and the Hall of Fame.
Jeff and Doug, you guys are going to tell me, I'm going to name these players, all right? We're going to go rapid fire, and we're going to see who has a chance and who doesn't. Bobby Abreu.
No.
Nope.
Doug?
I said no.
Oh, okay. You both know, right? All right, let's go. Barry Bonds. Doug, you said yes to Barry, right?
No, I didn't. I said not for me.
Oh, not for you.
I said he hasn't admitted it.
Gotcha. That's right. Jeff?
I say no because, you know, I know people say he was a Hall of Famer before he did the steroids. I don't buy that argument. Yeah, you know, I just don't.
All right. And I'm gonna just to be the, you know, what, devil's advocate here, if I'm using the right expression.
Yes.
I'm going to say yes to Barry Bonds, just to be, you know,
an antagonistic type personality.
Yes. I mean, the man is one of the greatest to play the game.
I just don't know why he needed to do it. That's all.
Yes, it's a shame. It's really a shame. All right, how about Mark Burley, pitcher?
Nope.
As a fantasy guy, yes.
You know, it's funny.
He had 14 seasons of 200 consecutive innings. 14 consecutive years, 200 innings.
I did not know
that. In today's game, and as a fantasy guy, he was a stud.
I did not know that.
And, you know, he 214 wins, 160 losses. You know, his stat, that's pretty good, but
3,000 innings, 3,283 innings.
Still not a Hall of Famer, though. All right, A.J. Burnett, we'll just say a big no to that and move on, okay? Roger Clemens.
No.
All right, staying with it. 354 wins.
Again, why did he have to take the steroids?
Okay, I understand. 354 wins, Roger Clemens. Wow. All right.
He settled a defamation suit with McNamee, right? His home insurance paid for that.
Yeah.
And his wife's admitted to taking steroids from his trainer.
Yep.
It's sad.
Maybe someday I'll come around. Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's a different discussion. Sorry.
Right. Well, we could have that discussion. The beauty of this show is it's our show. And tonight,
it's your show. Yes.
Your show too. Tonight we have three co-hosts.
All right. Thank you.
Michael Kadire is a big no.
No.
Dan Haran is a big no. LaTroy Hawkins, he's a no. If you guys disagree for some odd reason, okay.
Going through this, one of the stats on the pitchers that I thought was interesting is the whip. Dan Haran did have a very low whip, which I thought was impressive. But, you know, everyone goes by the ERA, et cetera. But going through this exercise, I was like, man, his whip is really amazing. But, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, well, now, let's Todd Helton. Any of you say Todd Helton, Hall of Fame?
I will.
And I'll agree with you. Jeff?
I will.
You know what? You know I'm a very, very difficult marker when it comes to type of this. I mean the standards gotta be very high, and you know what, I think he gets hurt by the Coors Field stigma there.
Doug, defend him. Okay. Todd Helton.
Okay, his lifetime batting average is .320. Okay, and I did go and look at his home and away,
right?
So home was .345, away was still .287. I mean, that's incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
And one, by definition, what is the definition? Contribution to the team on which he was a player. He played his entire career at Colorado. He didn't play 5 years at Seattle or Los Angeles, which is a pitcher's park, and then go to Colorado to pad his stats. You can't punish him for that. And in fact, by definition, he's to be rewarded because he's got all of the Colorado records.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So when I look, I was borderline. And when I started researching him, I'm in.
I agree with you. I got to agree. Not to be difficult, Jeff, but I got to agree. All right. This is an interesting one. I'm sure, Doug, you did a lot of research on this. Tim Hudson had a very Mike Mussina-like career.
He's very underrated. And I'm looking at his stats now. He had so many years of double-digit wins, and he averaged 220 innings per year. Now, that's in, you know, the era of the, you know, 2000s, where, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, it's not like when Nolan Ryan was averaging 300 innings a year. But in his era, you know, he's pretty good. ERA 3.5. For that era, you might be able to sway me.
Got 222 wins, 133 losses.
Yep.
That's a great ratio. I mean, Doug, what do you think?
He is going to be a borderline candidate, I think. You know, four-time All-Star. He was top five in the Cy Young three times, which is fairly impressive. So another one that's kind of his whip is 1.239. I started going through and looking at everybody's whip on that. So, but yeah, he's going to be a borderline. He might be like Al Oliver, which Kurt mentioned in terms of, will he make 5% the first year? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he'll make 5% the first year.
If I take Tim Hudson and I take Mike Mussina, and of course you don't have Mussina's stats in front of you, but I see a lot of similarities between them. I don't know. I might actually take Tim Hudson over Mike Mussina. I think he was a better pitcher.
The Moose was a cool nickname, though.
And didn't hurt playing in New York.
Well, okay, there's a little bit of a bias there, but okay, guys.
All right, Torrey Hunter.
You know what? He's a pretty good player, but no for me.
All are very good. Doug. Yeah.
I'm going to say yes because of 9 gold gloves. He was
really
a pretty good hitter, but I think the 9 gold gloves takes him over the top, just barely.
He did hit 353 home runs, which not bad.
But he never had a season where he had more than 30 home runs.
But that's it. So you actually say yes to Torrey Hunter.
I do.
That's okay.
Because of the defensive side of things.
And you know what? And
9 gold gloves is really impressive.
Speaking of defense, Len, the next guy on the list?
Oh, Andrew Jones. Yeah. He was a great defensive.
He was one of the all-time great center fielders.
Yeah. Andrew Jones. Yeah. I put him in. Doug?
I don't. And I do like him.
Okay. Now, wait. You put Torrey Hunter in, but mm-hmm. not Andrew Jones. Mm-hmm. Defend yourself, Doug.
I'm looking to see how many gold gloves. He didn't win quite as many gold gloves. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
It's 10.
Yeah. Oh, he did get 10. Wow. Wow.
434 home runs.
1 year he had 51 home runs.
His batting average, though, is
254. Torrey Hunter's
is 277. Andrew Jones is 254.
Right.
That is
And I was a Braves fan to a certain degree, so I do like Andrew Jones. But the 254 was actually the key thing that I didn't.
All right. And we already went over Kent. Andy Pettit.
Well, very good. I love that on my team, but he just doesn't go over that bar for me.
Okay, hold on a second, Andy Pettit, because we're gonna leave off the HGH, 256 wins, 153 losses.
I know,
and a 3.85 ERA is a little high, but and also postseason success. I say Andy Pettit gets in, maybe not this year, but.
Yeah, and his postseason success, he owns the major league record, most wins for postseason play. Now, of course, there's been layers and layers of postseason play since the beginning of time. You know, he's going through, 3 layers when he played?
Well, hold on. Are you putting Schilling in?
You know what? I will, because he is such a big game pitcher. He's like Jack Morris. Jack Morris didn't have the greatest stats, but you know what? He's a big game pitcher.
Doug?
I'm yes on both. I like Pettit. I'd like him in a big game. Kurt Schilling, yes.
Okay. All right. What about, I'm going to have trouble with this first name, but Aramis?
Aramis Ramirez. Aramis,
thank you. I guess.
As he played for the Cubs, so his name's Aramis Ramirez, yes.
Ramirez. What do you think, guys?
No.
Just barely no.
Okay. I mean, he had a good batting average. All right, whatever. Manny Ramirez. Manny being Manny. Nope.
No.
Nope.
Nope to both. Okay.
Failed test.
Both of you say no. Okay.
Failed test. Yeah, not once. Twice.
Twice. Right. Okay. Twice after it was illegal.
Right.
Scott Rowland.
Mm. He's got a case. He's got a case. 8-time Gold Glove winner. Mm-hmm. 280 batting average. Over 300 home runs. Hell of a player.
Hell of a player.
I don't know if he gets over that bar for me.
Right. Okay.
I would say yes.
You say yes, Doug?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Here's an interesting one, which I can't understand why he's not in already, but maybe you guys can argue this one. Gary Sheffield. Doug?
Gary, well, he is an admitted steroid user, so some people are going to hold that against him, correct?
That's the reason.
Yep. 509 home runs. Kind of a magic number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the steroid thing.
Yeah, it's got it because lifetime 292 batting average.
Yep. And, yeah. And he only had 30%, and it's his seventh year.
Yeah. Jeff?
I agree. It's, he's steroid use. If it wasn't for that, he's a no for me.
Sammy Sosa.
Sammy Sosa hit over 60 home runs 1, 2, 3 times and never led the league. What is that? How can he have 60 home runs 3 times and not lead the league?
Huh, I wonder.
It's pretty amazing, right? Yeah, Sammy Sosa, he never tested positive, or he was on the list. He was on
the Mitchell Report.
Right? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
He never tested positive, I believe.
I don't remember. I don't know if he was on the list or not, but
Mitchell Report is what it is, and look who, you know, contracted a senator, because it was a political type issue that was done for, but we can get into that some other day. The corked bat.
Yeah.
And I'm a Cubs fan. He hit 609 home runs.
Yeah.
That was right. A problem.
Nick Swisher is a no.
a fun player, but no.
Shane Victorino.
No.
He's a no. Omar Vizquel. How much emphasis do you guys put on defense? That's the question.
I am a Omar guy. I think he should be in.
11 gold gloves.
Yeah, I think he should be in. He's
almost 3,000 hits. Yeah.
And like I said, his stats are very comparable to Ozzy. He just doesn't do the black backflip.
Yeah. And maybe I don't know if he has this personality of Ozzy either.
That's, yeah.
I loved Ozzy as a manager. Sure. Oh my gosh, he was great. His interviews.
You know, here's one. Billy Wagner.
Yes.
I have him as a no, but
yes.
You say yes.
Yes. Who has the best all time K's per nine?
Well, I'm gonna guess Billy Wagner.
Oh, we're talking about Billy Wagner. Yeah, that's him. 11.9.
If you ever said to me that Billy Wagner would be even considered, I mean, I never thought of him as a Hall of Famer, but Jeff, your opinion.
I have a bias against relievers, so it's a no for me, but yeah, I'd still love him on my team.
Well, he was on your team at one point.
Was, yes.
Here's a good, and this is the last one, Barry Zito.
No for me. His 162 game average is 13-11 with a 4.04 ERA.
Yeah, I should have said no to him right away. But the one thing he did do very well was to sign a very big contract.
Huge contract.
Yes.
Great curveball. That, yes.
He could be in the Hall of Fame for that.
Yes, yes.
And we will be right back after this word from Gary Mack.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings Podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours, too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
Thank you, Gary Mack. Actually, Jeff, you even did that one better than me. Jeff, we've got to give a special shout out to Mariah Champagne. She is a 13-year-old lover of the show. She loves to cook. She makes her own recipes. And she's absolutely obsessed with the music group AJR. She loves our show.
So shout out to Mariah.
That's right. Thanks, Mariah. Hope you keep listening. And now, you can't have Doug Scheiding on without some really good barbecue talk. And we really had some great talk from the award-winning pitmaster, Doug Scheiding. Take a listen.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to turn the show over to you. We have on Doug is, you know, top rate. In the world of baseball, he is definitely top rate. As we said, the guy hit over 500 home runs. So,
and I could pitch with both hands. It was great. I was ambidextrous.
So, Doug, my son came home from college, and first thing he did was make a brisket.
And I wonder whose recipe he followed or at least a variation of. That's what I'm asking. Inquiring minds want to know.
You know what? He did take it off the Traeger website on the app.
Okay.
So it was that one. But I thought, look, for the first time doing it, it was great. But you know, I'm biased in my judgment, so I gave a couple pieces over to Len. But Len, what did you say?
It was delicious. It was
oh, really fantastic! Good. That's great.
You know what, Doug? You know what's so funny though?
What?
His son is a sophomore in college. He wanted to make this brisket. I get a text. Jeff was surprised. He's like, "No, he didn't text you." I get a text from him, and he said from his son. And he says, I'd give the brisket a 7 out of 10.
He said, wow.
Yeah. He said it was a little tough. He said, but it had good pull. And I'm like thinking to myself, how the heck does he know? Or a good tug or whatever it was. Uh-huh. And now, it also had a very good smoke ring.
Ah, a little lipstick.
Yeah. And I like that. And it was made on a Traeger. And it was a beautiful smoke. It actually was a beautiful smoke ring.
Awesome.
And yeah, that was another thing. It was very good. It was very tender. I liked it. Really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Was it smoked overnight?
No, it was not smoked overnight.
Okay. All right. Wasn't my recipe then.
The flat. I don't think it was the point. I think it was just the flat. I don't think.
What? It was just the flat? How much did it weigh?
It weighed about 11 pounds.
Oh, yeah, no, it had the point on it. Dude.
Oh, then it had the
if
point.
If it was okay. 11 pounds, flat. Yeah. I was like, man, if it just had the flat, he might as well just go up against Nolan Ryan on the first bat, you know, his at bat, and, you know, to see how his luck is going to go.
Well, then you just gave me the flat part, because I don't think what you gave me was the point, and it was delicious.
Well, because he knows you like lean meat, and so, you know, in Texas, he was lean or fat, and so, you know, when you like the lean. He understands that.
All right, so we talked about the Hall of Fame, all right?
You still affiliated with Hit Country?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love their, was it the apple habanero sauce?
Oh, yeah. To me, that's my current favorite with them is the apple habanero. So that's actually my base sauce for my chicken and my ribs. So that's currently it used to be the original, but now the apple habanero is, and don't be afraid with the habanero name. It has a little bit of spice, but not too much spice. So yeah, actually the name I think makes it sound a little spicier than it is.
You know, Doug, my daughter for the holiday, she bought me artisan sauces. She went on Etsy. It's unbelievable how many people are making their own sauces.
Ugh.
I never realized, you know, we've had on, of course, Ray Sheehan, who has, you know, his barbecue Buddha sauces, and he's doing quite well with it. And at one time we had on Damon Mullen, right? Am I saying his name right, Jeff? Right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Sweet Heat.
Right. Sweet Heat had sauces. But when you go on like Etsy, and of course there's the brands, you know, Head Country and Blues Hog and, you know, all the, you know, the names of the sauces. But when you go on Etsy, it's amazing how many, and that's just on Etsy.
Well, that's from all over the world, except, I mean, there's enough sauces here in the U.S. without having to go all over the world. I mean, Head Country is actually like the number 7 in terms of, you know, production and in terms of sales of sauce, you know, and heck, they're only in 15 or 20 states. They're not even widely distributed. So they're kind of like you mentioned, you know, the other sauce. Blues Hog is like so known in competition that, you know, that kind of changed the flavor profile in competition for a while, but Head Country is kind of just quietly underneath the line, the Mendoza line, and no one knows about it and stuff. So, but Head Country is just fantastic. And so, yeah, I've been associated with them, and I've used Head Country literally since day one. A neighbor of mine who got me cooking on drum smokers also gave me a bottle of Head Country sauce to make, you know, to make my first ribs with. And, you know, that was back in 2008.
So, Doug, do you get, being that you have now, of course, you're associated with our show, so I'm sure that the offers are rolling in. But
exactly, exactly, because, you know, the Barbecue Central show is totally overrated, and so is Greg. I mean, do you agree with me or not?
I was going to say, you know,
do you agree with me or not?
I know. No, no, no. I would never say that.
Oh, come on.
He may be listening.
Oh, no, he'll never listen. You'll never hear about it.
But how do you, you probably get so many offers and people coming to you and they want you to either test their product, represent their product. How do you decide what you're going to represent or be involved with?
Well, that's a great question. A couple of things. Yeah. In fact, I got two today, you know, on Instagram. In fact, last week or two, you know, on, we've got a chat with the, you know, our embedded correspondents and stuff. And so right. We were like, oh yeah, you know, these are the crazy people that are, you know, trying to contact us and stuff. And so, but oddly enough, two today, I got two, hey, you know, DM me if you're interested in other, you know, products and et cetera. So, you know, I've got a couple of criteria. Number one, I've got to know it in, you know, it's got to be kind of in my repertoire. You know, I'll take a look at some new things, but I definitely do not want to be a NASCAR kind of guy. And the people that I, and companies that I do team up with, for like, let's say recently I've teamed up with E3 Meat Company out of Kansas. Their mission and what they do in terms of, they've got a foundation that's actually, you know, donates 10% of their profits from the meat company to the foundation. That's, and one of their things is human trafficking, which is, you know, something that's a problem, that it's those kind of quality type organizations and people and the people that are already associated with them. And I do like their product. I'm a sales guy. I've always been, as a sales guy, you've got to believe and use the product. Head Country, I've used it since day one. Traeger, you know, I've had great success with Traeger and being with them, and Suckle Busters, you know, which is another one that I'm associated with, which is a rub out of Texas. And Salt, Pepper, Garlic, their SPG, that's kind of my base rub on my brisket. And so that is my base rub, Head Country Marinade, and then the Suckle Busters SPG. And then from there, I'll play. Those are two things I'm not going to change. But so it's the quality of the organization. Do I use it and believe in the product? And, you know, does it conflict with anything else? So people, I used to make my own rubs, and it can kind of drive yourself crazy. I'd rather just use a commercial rub and sauce.
Hmm. Doug, I'm going to ask you for a recipe. Do you have a good recipe for a Cornish game hens on the grill?
You know, I treat them as they are. Smaller chickens. You know, they're about 4 pounds, right? 3 to 4 pounds.
Yeah.
So I won't inject as much, and sometimes I don't inject. But for chicken or hens, because actually at the Houston Rodeo, they've switched from really cooking chickens, like say 5 pound birds, to the boxes. The turn in box is so small, it's really a Cornish hen now. And so I do just about the same thing that I do on my half chicken, and I do it on that Cornish hen. So I'll use something like, I'm not sponsored by Butcher's Barbecue, but I do use his products for injecting. The chicken is a totally blank slate. So you don't need a lot of flavor to have a big effect in the actual base meat. And then really the key then is really the, you know, getting the skin. The skin a little crispy and not rubbery stuff. So yeah. But yeah, I think brining is a waste of time and energy and money. Brining a chicken, I think, is a waste. And one thing I will say about chicken, do not, and I presume they sell them as young, fresh Cornish hens, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Do not waste money on any chicken that's been frozen. And do not buy a Cornish hen in. So I buy the young fresh, and I think that's down to like 28, 29 degrees is what they're, you know, it won't be solid like a turkey, you know, bowling ball that you get on, you know, get a young fresh, and then it's partially frozen, not totally frozen. And that is what I've cooked. I think I have never placed in a top 10 when I have cooked a frozen chicken, whether I bought it as a young fresh and then froze it, and then cooked it. I think it changes the texture of the meat somehow.
So you would put on the same seasoning, same
yeah, sauce, sure. Whatever. It's just a smaller chicken. Okay. It's just a smaller chicken.
Doug, before this corona happened, how often were you competing?
Oh, I would compete. The last couple of years, I think I've averaged about 12 to 15. competitions a year. And then the other, let's say last year I was gone, 27 weekends for barbecue. So I think I did 14 competitions last year. And then the rest of them were for Traeger events or, some other event sort of thing. So most of them were Traeger, classes or events, et cetera. I've been going out to the Santa Barbara Beer and Barbecue Festival where I kind of help head up their barbecue side, and then, go up to Montana a few times and things. So
now, have you been to Kansas City for a barbecue?
Oh, absolutely. Well, when you say barbecue, I've cooked the American Royal twice, right, which is a very hard contest just because, if you cook that event, you're in the Invitational, in the Open, it's 11 turn-ins. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. I did it, I think the last time I did it was 2018. I cooked actually with that one with Danielle Devecue, if you've heard of her. So we actually did pretty well and stuff. So, but for barbecue, to eat, from restaurants is what you're talking about?
Yeah, because we were shamed. We had Robert Wool on, and he shamed us.
He shamed you? In what way?
He said, you're a barbecue podcast, and you've never been to Kansas City. So we have got to, Jeff and I, we have to plan our trip to Kansas City.
Yeah, okay. I probably win in 2014-ish, because not this year. But most years we go to a different stadium, baseball stadium. And so we went and saw the Royals. And I think what Hall of Fame is there? Is that
the Negro League Hall of Fame?
Yes. So we went to that one when we were there. And in fact, it was really weird. Some of the most hate I've ever had wearing Cubs gear was at the KC stadium, which I thought was really weird. But yeah, we went to Arthur Bryant's and we went to a couple of other ones while we're there. So absolutely. When we go to different baseball stadiums and cities, I'm always game to, obviously to go check out some of the better, highly known barbecue restaurants. Yes.
Doug, I have two questions. When you said you had 11 turn-ins, what type of meat are you turning in? 11 different types, or is it brisket three times?
So at the American Royal, which is the largest barbecue contest in the world, the Houston Rodeo might be after that, but they have an invitational, which means you have to win win or reserve a contest and 50 people or whatever, and then you qualify for this. So it's people that have won. So, there might be 150 teams at that. And so that's sponsored by KCB or sanctioned by KCBS. And so then you have the four turn-ins. So they're all in 30-minute increments. So you've got chicken, then I think it's ribs, pork butt, and brisket. So those are your four turn-ins. And it's actually very fast-paced. I like it because in Texas, we skip the pork butt, and then we have chicken, ribs, and brisket. So, but it's separated, let's say, by an hour and a half. So there's a lot of time. It's a lot of dead time. So, but I do like the fast. So Friday, those are four turn-ins. And then that's Saturday. Then Sunday is when the American Royal Open is, and they'll have 300 to 400 to 600 teams. The best one that I went to was when it was held in the Arrowhead Stadium, and which is right next to the, where the Royals play and everything. And so the parking was great. It was actually great having it there. So the next day, the open day, they'll have 300 to 600 teams. You've got seven turn-ins. They've got, you've got your four, and then they've got like sausage, dessert, potato. There's all these other turn-ins. There's eight. So I'm missing one. Sausage, potato. Yeah. So there's ancillaries that they have that you turn in. And I always want to turn all of them in because heck, you never know what you're going to. I mean, when we were with Danielle, we were first in potato, and I think we got second in sausage or something like that. And so then actually the following year she was determined and she actually won the sausage the next year. But so it's, four turn-ins on the invitational and then eight on the open. You don't have to turn them all in. And a lot of people don't, because a lot of people think the ancillary contests actually take your focus off you know, the actual barbecue event and of the main, you know, the main event. But heck, if you can get a first in the other one, that's just as good as the, you know, first in brisket to a certain degree. Yeah. Sorry.
And my other question is when next time you get into the Philly area, let us know. We'll meet you down there at the Citizens Bank Park and we'll get together with Greg Lozinski and you'll check out his barbecue there. He is a concession right there in the
state. I've heard about it. Yeah, we went to Philly probably 3-4 years ago. So yeah, probably Tampa's up there, but I will definitely let you know when we get up that way or even New York. So we haven't been to the new Yankee Stadium for a game. We took a tour when we were up that way, but yeah.
Speaking of New York, unfortunately, due to COVID, one of the great barbecue restaurants in New York City closed down. Mm-mm. It's called Blue Smoke, and I've been there several times, and it was definitely one of the best ones out there.
Really?
Yeah.
And they How long was that? How many years had that been around?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. They just closed down last week.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Wow. Actually, I had a guy buy that was opening up a Blue Smoke barbecue restaurant that bought it. I'm a collector of web domains. Mm. So he bought that. That was probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. But anyway, that's sad to hear.
Yeah.
That's sad to hear.
So I was going to ask you something.
Oh, no worries. No worries. Well, you know, you mentioned Head Country. So yeah, I just got a contract for another year. I probably have, you know, on Traeger's website, I have 11 recipes and a few in the queue. On Head Country, I probably have at least that many. And maybe more. I mean, I just developed they didn't have a prime rib recipe. And
really?
So they contacted me, you know, it was about a month before Thanksgiving. And, you know, they texted me and said, hey, what's your favorite thing to cook on, the Thanksgiving holiday? And I said, well, other than turkey, it's prime rib. And they said, perfect answer. We want you to develop a recipe. And I'm like, okay, perfect. So I developed a recipe for prime rib for them. But I love just doing the recipes. You know, with the Traeger, you know, it takes the fire management out of it and you can have fun developing recipes. And that's actually been a creative side, not my engineering side, but a creative side that has come out in my cooking that I really enjoy and have fun doing.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I love the Traeger. I mean, seriously, it is great. You're right. It's you set it, and you don't have to worry about. You could just
it's set it and forget it. I think is misleading.
Right. I was gonna say you're gonna have to feed the hopper if you're running out of pellets.
You do have to feed the hopper, but you know, there's things you do. You can use spritz.
Right.
Move it around.
Yeah. It's not set it and forget it.
It's the set it and forget it, I think, is a little misleading. So I don't like that. But you can do that if you want to get sleep all night. You know, so I cooked 2 brisket points this weekend and put it on at 10 and got up at 7 and checked it. And I left it on till 11 and, you know, naked and then wrapped them. But I was cooking it, you know, like 170. You know, so all night. That's why I was asking if the brisket was an all-nighter, but that's perfect for what the Traeger. It's such a fine smoke. You put it on and then you can just leave it and it's perfect for low and slow. It's perfect for low and slow.
Jeff, that one you said it was 11 pounds. You started that what time in the morning? 8?
Yeah.
And what time?
4 or 5, whenever it got up to the temperature. Yeah, you know, when I had the probe in there, then once the temperature hit 165, 167, something like that. Yeah.
And then you wrapped it.
Yeah. Then it had to go up to 205, I think it was.
Yeah. You could wrap it a little earlier, 160-ish, maybe. 155 even.
Yeah.
So but
and you wrapped it in foil, right?
Right.
So okay, so all right. I told you I listened to that guy this weekend.
Brian Grieco from
Jeff Brian Grieco, yes.
Yes, this weekend, for the first time ever, I wrapped it in parchment paper and then the aluminum foil around it. Thought that was very interesting what he had said. So I was looking it up just from and what he said for viewers that may or listeners that may not have heard it is that the aluminum foil reacts with some of the acids that could be in. So it's a great reason not to cook with mustard, which I don't. Because that has acid. And I've always said, I don't know what your rub chemical reaction is with mustard. when you put mustard on. So I don't know all the chemical reactions. So I just never, I've used mustard a few times. It doesn't add anything in my view. But he also said citric acid, which is the apple cider vinegar, I thought was very interesting. Some people put that, you know, in their sauce and, you know, put the foil on. Yeah, maybe. And, you know, and then he said tomato sauce too, that could react. And I looked it up and I'm like, I'll be darned. He's right. So I don't think I have any of those in my rubs. But I certainly add a touch of apple cider vinegar to apple cider vinegar is the equivalent liquid to salt. You know, always people on the cooking shows, what are they? You really should have salted a little more. Well, yeah. Okay. All right. Apple cider vinegar in your glazes, in your sauce, will actually perk up your taste buds a little bit when it hits your tongue. And it'll, you know, in competition barbecue, that's what you want. You're looking for that one bite, but that's what apple cider vinegar does.
Now I remember what I was going to ask you.
Oh, sweet. I knew we'd come around to it. Just like Kurt. We came around to it with Kurt too.
Doug, so you saw on Netflix the competition show, right? Now all of a sudden I can't remember, but
no, I didn't. Chef's Table or the other one. Yeah, I didn't see it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but this doesn't matter whether
you I wanted to see it. Let's just say that.
Okay. So have you ever been approached or tried to get onto it, whether it's, you know, Pitmasters or what, one of these television shows? Have you ever been approached or tried to get onto one of those?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When in 2013, when I first started, you know, switched over with Traeger and everything. So I cooked that San Antonio rodeo when I got an issue with my teammate and, you know, the rogue cooker story and stuff like that. So yeah, oddly enough, that the guy that, you know, was next to me and asked me to cook in the Houston rodeo, because they had won the Houston rodeo and they fought over the trophies and stuff and he didn't have cookers. So that's actually how I cooked the Jack the first time. He asked me to cook the Jack, called me on a Monday, went and cooked the Jack that weekend and came back. I mean, it was 80 hours of just craziness, but while at the Jack, because we finished maybe 70th or something, but everyone thought we were on backyard cookers because we were cooking on barrels and stuff there. And it was kind of funny and stuff, but we did decently well. And he asked me, he goes, hey, there's this event in New York where it was the Kingsford Invitational where they, you know, invited like 8 teams to go. And he goes, I need a cook for that. And it was like in 2 weeks, and being on TV and that sort of thing was appealing, but I was like, I just can't do a quality job and represent myself well and do that in 2 weeks. And I'm like, no, Kerry, I'm sorry. I can't do that. Yeah. He appeared on TV and if I was on, I wouldn't want to have been associated with kind of how he performed on that event. So that was probably my only time. You know, I did a TV infomercial for Traeger, I guess a couple of months ago.
Oh, and, that show, right?
Huh? I'm sorry?
That show, right?
Yeah, it was Texas Today. Yeah. So I did do that. It's Traeger's advertising in the Dallas marketplace. And so this was something that they were asked to do. And so I went and did that. And heck, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was great. I mean, it seemed like we talked for a minute and a half instead of 4 minutes.
See, I'm always amazed with those cooking shows when they have you have a fully stocked pantry or whatever, right? And
yeah.
And then they give them they're like, here's the meat, you know, they give them whatever they're going to be using. And they're like, okay, now go get your ingredients or whatever. And they just know what they're going to cook and they run into the pantry and they get.
Yeah. My wife said, I'm probably not, would be the best on that sort of thing. I have a need to think and plan it out, et cetera. But I, you know, I'm addicted to those kind of shows. Cutthroat Kitchen with Alton Brown. I love that show because, you know, all the dastardly deeds he would do to the, you know, the people and they'd pay money. I just love that show. I was addicted. You know, The Beat Bobby Flay, you know, I mean, he's on season 23. I've watched almost all the episodes but I watch them again. And, I'll be working and I'll watch them and stuff. But there's been some, even recently that I haven't seen. So, no, I do like the show. You know, I didn't like Chopped as well. But if, Bobby Flay is on or something. But, a good friend of mine actually won Chopped. He's actually a trained culinary. The Chopped Grill Master season one, Ernest Cervantes of Burnt Bean Company. He's a chef that was at Texas Lutheran University. Actually just opened up his barbecue restaurant in Seguin. And he won season one. We were at the watch party, that he had and stuff. So, yeah.
I think Ed Randolph, Jeff, didn't Ed Randolph?
I think he was on Chopped. Was it Chopped?
I thought he won his episode, I guess.
Yeah, maybe he won his episode. But mm-hmm. The first season, Ernest Cervantes won. Yeah. And yeah, it was great. I mean, it was great. Texas guy, and he's just not. But he's a trained chef, so he's good at okay, give me four wild ingredients and elderberry or whatever you want to, and coming up with the recipe. So my wife, if I could do it, have my wife do that first version out of the basket, and then let me cook a dish that I've cooked several times. That would be perfect, but they don't allow that. They don't have it. We don't have a DH in Chopped. Not like the National League. And let's keep the pitchers hitting every now and then.
Doug, I agree with you. I'm anti-DH, but I will say I'm not ready to die on that hill, because the way the pitcher they use these days, they don't go more than 5-6 innings. They don't know how to bunt. Strategy's already taken out. So I'm,
they're weak.
I know. Weak. It's time to turn the page. It's my forgiven.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess. It's more pure baseball. But heck, if you were going to put, people on in the second, second base in the extra innings, and a pitcher has to pitch to three instead of, I like a pitcher pitching to one batter. Uh-huh. Mano y mano. That's the definition of mano y mano.
Right.
And coming in, that is more strategy than, for the manager as well, and thinking moves ahead. But anyway,
I will tell you why I'm kind of anti relievers in the Hall of Fame.
And it's anti what?
A bias against the relievers.
Oh, in
the
Hall of Fame,
when they're coming in one inning at a time. If the old days when you had Raleigh Fingers, Rich Gossage, Bruce Sutter, they come in this seventh inning with two guys on, one out, and they're pitching the rest of the game. These guys, they come in for 15 pitches, they get their save, and it's done. I mean, it's, they're gonna get that save 97-98% of the time.
Yeah, but the good ones should be brought in some in the eighth inning, right?
Yeah, then they don't get that save stacked. They don't get that save because they take it out of the game.
Well, but no, I'm saying they come in the eighth, and then they're getting
five. Oh, sure, but
the good ones are so yeah.
Yeah. And with that, Doug, do you have anything you'd like to plug? You're on Instagram, right?
Instagram at Rogue Cookers, and Twitter as well as Facebook as well. So, and we've already mentioned the longest running Barbecue Central. Which correspondent, with the overrated show and the overrated, guy, but, his origin stories were just amazing. They were really good. And, I had someone yesterday said that they listened to my origin story, and truthfully, it took me 2 weeks to post that thing because I was like, wow, I kind of shared a lot of stuff that
you did.
Really shared with people. Yeah. And I had my wife listen to it. I'm like, is it okay to kind of post that? But anyway, so yeah, that was a lot. And Head Country, obviously, love their products and the people there, and Suckle Busters and E3. So those are my three with Head Country and Traeger being paid sponsors.
And I want to say with that origin story, a couple of things.
Uh-oh.
I gave you the challenge because I was being just
crazy. Yes.
And I gave you a challenge. And I said, Doug, when you give your story, you are to use, if you are really good, I want you to use a word in that story. And the word is candelabra. And you
used it.
Yes. Did you go back and listen to it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, I did use it. I didn't think I was going to be able to use that.
Yeah. Well, you did. And for our listeners, Find Doug's origin story on the Barbecue Central show with incredible host Greg Rempe, and
overrated.
Hear Doug as he uses the word candelabra in his origin story.
It was the story. It was with the story of kind of in the college time frame. If you're good. Trying college to narrow time. Down into
that's
something,
the
so yeah, the night the night I met with my wife. So yeah, that's all I'll say.
And I and the other thing that I want to say, we joke about it, of course, but we are so thankful to the Barbecue Central show for so many reasons. But right now, one of the main reasons is that we found you and Doug. You are just, I know Greg said this was going to be your 78th time on our show.
78th time, yeah, exactly, you know.
And we hope that we go 100 plus, okay? You are a joy, and you know that, and we're
appreciate
so glad
it.
That we found you. And we just, we really appreciate you
yes.
coming on, being a friend of the show. Thank you. If anything, if 2020, which was a crazy year,
yes,
did anything, was we found you, and I just, I know it sounds corny, but I'm saying it. I like to tell people that when I appreciate them, when we appreciate them, and we appreciate you.
Thank you very much. I was actually feeling a little pressure on the baseball side. I'm like, I'm a fantasy guy. This is, you know, and so I actually studied some. I contacted my good friend here, Mark Solomon, here in town. I'm like, you know, who's the commissioner of the league, who's won our league 15 times out of 20 years. But hey, I won it last year, this year. So, I mean, you know, what have you done for me last? But yeah, I'm like, man, you got to help me. You got to help me. And so. So he was the one that was telling me, oh yeah, the pitching, you know, he's Kershaw's on his team and he thinks Kershaw's the GOAT and he's in and all this stuff. But that actually took me into a good path in terms of looking at, you know, the differences in pitching now versus the past. But no, yeah. It's been fun. I love both. And could talk both of them for hours, and it's been great to get to know you guys.
Thank you, Doug.
And you thank you very much. And thank you, Doug Scheiding, for joining us for this entire episode, talking with Kurt, talking with us, talking baseball, talking barbecue. That's what we do here.
Yes, we do. We got it. Like I said in the interview, tonight we had three co-hosts. Maybe if we count Kurt, four, but Doug Scheiding, definitely. I got to watch my back, Jeff. Because I think if ever I, you know, have to take a day off, I think he could easily step in, and I'd be, it'd be another Wally Pipp situation.
Well, you know, we love Doug Scheiding.
Exactly. Yes. Terrific. So, Jeff, thank you for an incredible episode 81. Let's go out with none other than our friends, the poet, the musician, Shel Krakowski, Dave Dresser, with Baseball Always Brings You Home.
See ya. Fresh class.